Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast that tries to find solace in a world where our minds are usually against us. My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each episode, we speak to a different guest and talk about their stories, their experiences, and their lives as they fight against living miserably. But we'll try to have a laugh with it, because on the surface, that sounds like a pretty fucking bleak idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably. In this episode, we speak to Cariad Lloyd, a comedian, actress, writer, podcaster. Basically, she can do anything and everything. Cariad has appeared on Would I Lie to You, QI, Have I Got News for You, and hosts the award-winning podcast Griefcast. Today, we speak to Cariad about grief, obviously. I mean, she does a whole podcast on it. We weren't going to avoid that one, were we? Anxiety and dipping your toes in the ocean. But that's enough of my voice for now. Let's do this thing.
Hello, welcome. Today we are joined by the magnificent... I'm going to start that again. This is why I don't start. I had a little Aaron moment where I couldn't get my words out.
Oh, I see. Thanks for that, mate.
That's what's known as
18
Aaron.
Episodes in.
Yeah. Jesus. Wonders no, your anxiety.
It's because you always score... I'm just going to do that again.
Turn this out.
I feel like to just be the intro, just 5 minutes of apologising. Hello. For God's sake, I'm in my head now.
This is definitely now the intro, you know that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is it.
Can't it's like when we spent like 3 minutes working out with hello was an appropriate intro. It's like, well, it is the designated way to kick things off.
Ruining the mystery of the podcast now.
Bienvenue.
Right.
Welcome.
Third time lucky?
Yeah. Hello. Hi. We are joined today by the magnificent Cariad Lloyd.
Hello.
Hi. That took me 3 attempts there.
Bienvenue. Bonjour. Hello. Guten Tag. Hey. That's it.
It's like when someone says, think of a different way to say hello without saying hello. So,
You right?
Yeah. Morning.
It's starting. Listen up.
Begin the talking.
Yeah. Oh, first question that we always kick things off with is, when was the last time you felt calm?
She laughs as only someone with anxiety can. Do you know what? As I was just saying before, I fell asleep in a cab on the way here. I hate saying I get cabs. It makes me anxious. It makes me feel like people think, oh, someone's doing well. It's not. It was the only way I could get here. And that actually, genuinely, I felt calm today because good point in the cycle, hormonally, everything's feeling better. Sunny, always feel better when it's sunny. Managed to do some big scary things. So like if you have anxiety, you can kind of be like, oh, okay, all the big red lights are slightly off. So yeah, I think it was falling asleep in a taxi on the way here, which is very rare for me to fall asleep. Normally I think, don't fall asleep, you can't, too much to do. And I thought, you know what? Also, the taxi was a little bit too hot. So that was it, but that's very unusual for me. I'm not a calm person at all.
I was going to say, when was the last time before that?
Oh, I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you. Probably last August. Genuinely, yeah, like you caught me on a good day. I was thinking at the cab, I was like, oh, I'm feeling much better today. Probably last August when I was on holiday and I went to the sea. I'm much better when I'm by the sea. And on my birthday, and when I say holiday, I mean the Isle of Wight, we went to the seaside and I went in the sea and I fundamentally am better if I've been in the seawater. Mm-hmm. So weird. But like I came out and I was like, oh, that's like 25 therapy sessions. Why do I not do that more? So that was really nice.
There's something about a British beach. Oh, I think, like, so if you nice. Give me the choice between like a tropical beach or like beach in the northeast on the coast, I'd pick that.
I would pick the tropical
time.
Beach.
Would
I would.
You?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I think I go tropical beach as well. Sorry.
If it's there, I'll take any sea. My rule with the sea is wherever you are, mm-hmm. you have to go and dip your feet in.
Yeah, 100%.
And I was once with a group of people who refused. They were like, oh no, well let's just get back to London.
No.
And I got really upset. I was like, "You have to just shoes and socks, paddle, mm-hmm. then back in the car and drive wherever you
and draw something in the sand.
Draw
with
something
your finger.
In the sand. Mm-hmm. Go and look at it at least. Yep. At least. If it's pissing down, freezing, okay, but you have to at least look at it. Dip your fingers in. Yeah, get upset if it's there.
Yeah.
No.
Why would you not do it?
Why would you not do it? Yeah. One of them still brings it up that I've not got over it, that she wouldn't get in the water. Anyway, so yeah, I'm not a calm person at all. Because when I stop, I find that's when my anxiety gets quite bad. If it's like, oh, I've got nothing to do. Why have I got nothing to do? What's happening
what
with
forgot?
The world? What have I forgotten something? God, you never do anything. Yeah, you know, so it's quite nice. I find, actually in comedy as well, people who have anxiety tend to be like, work a lot, mm-hmm. workaholics. Yeah, because it's like, and then I don't think. Look how busy I am. Yeah. I do so many things, guys, and none of them are thinking. It's
all distraction, isn't it?
It's so distracting. Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I do the same thing. I have about 6 projects going on at any one time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I wonder why I'm so stressed and tired all the time.
Yeah.
But then the moment I stop, I just get, like you say, worse because the guilt and the kind of anxiety. I must be doing something. I must have failed or forgotten to do something if I have any time.
That was a big change for me with my anxiety. Sorry, you haven't asked me a question. I've just gone off on one.
No, love
that,
it.
My therapist said, finally got, you know, people have said things to you, they say the same thing, you just don't hear it. And she finally, I heard her say, like, anxiety isn't, it isn't an emotion, it's an avoidance of something. And when I finally heard that properly, I was like, oh, because you think, no, I'm feeling bad, I feel anxious, rather than like, oh no, I'm avoiding feeling sad or depressed or, you know, vulnerable. Yeah. And so I'm choosing the anxiety. And then I was like, oh, like I choose the work to keep me busy, to keep me distracted from feeling the very simple thing, which is like, oh, I might feel sad. And that's actually what it is. But I was like, I found that really, you know, when you finally hear it, I was like, oh, that does make sense.
Yeah.
That is what I'm doing. Thanks, therapist.
When was the first time that you become aware? I'm going to start that again. See?
See? Wasn't it in the fist?
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative?
Oh, within me or society?
Both.
Of course.
I don't know, really. I definitely know that when I was at school, nobody used the phrase, like, I'm of a certain age, that when I was at school, no one said depression or anxiety. So you would talk a lot about, like, my generation of girls. It was like eating disorders. But it was never, the phrase mental health wasn't really used. And so, to explain, my dad died when I was 15. And, you know, so I was at school when this was happening. And nobody ever said anything like, oh, this, you know, it was never used in that, like, oh, this might affect your mental health. It was always like, our dad's died, like, fact. So she's sad. Fact.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't like, oh, that will affect how she feels about the world or anything like that at all. I mean, not to me, other people, I'm sure. were being told the information. I just feel like in the last 5-6 years, it's obviously like you just heard that phrase more and were like, oh, mental health and mental health. Whereas I'm from that, like, and it makes me sound so old, but, you know, it used to be like, oh, they went crazy. They had a breakdown. They had a breakdown was as much as you said. His wife left him, he had a breakdown. That was like, oh, he's crazy, isn't he? He's not coming to the party. Like, that sort of was like, that was it. There wasn't like, oh, well, I wonder what happened and how he is and is he having counselling? Well, I don't know, he's crazy, isn't he? So he's not coming here.
Yeah.
Just like you were put in a box almost. Like, yeah, that, it was that's just, you.
Yeah, and there was like no, it wasn't much understanding of it. It was just like, and especially, I mean, obviously my big passionate project is grief. And there was no understanding of the link between grief and mental health. Because the part of your brain that lights up when you're grieving is the same part of your brain that lights up when you're depressed. And I didn't find that out for years. Mm-hmm. Like, and then when people would talk about depression, I would feel like, oh, I feel like I know what that is. Mm. And then when I found out that, I was like, oh, yeah, that's how grieving feels. It feels like there's no point to anything. But obviously, grief is not a mental health issue. And it's very different to depression because you can be like, oh, here is the reason I feel sad. This person is dead. But they are very connected. And depression and anxiety often come out of grieving as well. So, yeah, I'd only say, again, like most people, pretty recently that became something you said without someone being like, why are you bringing up your, like, doctor's things when we're just talking?
And when you were kind of grieving, was there anything that helped you through that process, or was it just something that kind of you just rode the wave of it until you got out of it?
Well, I would say one of my other beefs is to talk about how you don't get out of it.
Yeah.
So grief is not the sort of the past understanding used to be that there was these 5 stages and you just had to tick them off, and then congratulations. Yeah, you know, like as if you could do like 5 Edinburgh festivals and now it's a Radio 4 show. Congratulations. That's a comedy joke for people in the city. So now what it's seen as is that it's completely different visual diagrams, basically, that grief is like this sort of big squiggly mess that lives in you and your life grows around it, but it doesn't go away. It stays within you all the times. And it can blur and it can get softer, but it is very, anything can happen that causes that big squiggle to come back into your life as if you were still grieving. Yeah. So,
once again, like depression.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly like depression. Yeah. And, so we're trying on the grief class, we try and sort of get rid of those phrases of like get through it or felt better, like because you just learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. Like a mental health problem. So yeah, in terms of what helped me, I think the biggest thing that helped me was finally talking about it. I decided to talk about it on a podcast on a weekly basis. Now, not everyone has to do that. That's fine. You can just talk to your friends. But so, yeah, my dad died when I was 15 and I didn't seek any help at all until about 18 years after he died. So, which is quite common when it comes to bereavement as a teenager or bereavement as a child or a teenager, because you're processing so much life that it normally takes you to get to your 30s where you're like, oh, hang on, what happened to me? Because you spend your 20s trying to be like, ah, I don't want to think about what happened to me.
That never happened.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's the same with any traumatic incident, but definitely with bereavement, people get to their 30s and I assume it's like you probably maybe get married or you have a child or you buy a house, you start thinking, oh, hang on, what life do I want? What life didn't I have? So yeah, I didn't get any help until 18 years after he died. And then talking about it as I do now, like to the point where it's relentless because I don't do things by halves, has really helped because I feel like I processed so much stuff that I just thought I'd never get over, inverted commas, which now I'd be like, oh yeah, I actually feel okay talking about that. Was before even saying like, oh, my dad died, used to be like internally, oh God, what are they going to ask me? What am I going to say? Whereas now I'm like, yeah, I kind of am used to talking about him.
Did you start talking about it before the podcast, or is the podcast a nice incentive to start talking about it?
I started trying to talk about it before the podcast. So I went to my GP with like all these other symptoms, like my gums are bleeding and I can't sleep. And he was like, do you think you're stressed and you have anxiety? And it was actually a GP was the first person who said anxiety to me, and I was like, oh sure, yeah, that sounds right, yeah, like I'll tick that box. And then I began the long process of trying to find someone to talk about it, which you know, as we know, if you go via the NHS, is amazing that you have that option, but is not always quick.
Yep.
So yeah, I did start trying to talk about it before the podcast, and then the podcast kind of came alongside it. I think because I had started talking to someone, I started feeling like I could do the podcast without breaking down, and I felt more strong about talking about it. And then I finally found a regular therapist, and yeah, pretty much the same time as the podcast took off, and I was like, oh, these are obviously connected.
Because there's something in sharing stories as well that just makes you feel a bit like less alone, isn't it?
Yeah, like one of the biggest symptoms of grief, same with depression, is isolation. And it's really common for people grieving to say like they feel very lonely, they feel very isolated, and they feel like nobody understands what they're going through. So even if like your best friend is like, I'm here for you, I want to talk to you, I have found from talking to myself and other people, there is nothing so powerful as someone else going, yeah, me too, my dad also died at 50, my dad had pancreatic cancer, you know, or my sibling had cancer, like anything that connects you from what you've been through. And it, I always feel bad for that, because it sounds like it's not that if you haven't been through it you can't help, of course you can. But like when I spoke to Jack Rook for my podcast, who also lost his dad at 16 or 17, sorry Jack, can't remember your exact age, it was just incredible, because that was the first time I'd spoken to someone in the 18 years, 20 years since my dad had died, who'd been through a similar situation to me. And I found that like so healing when he was like, oh, I did this and I did that. I was like, yes, me too. Oh my God, me too. And you know, we're humans. We want to connect. We want to feel like we're not alone. We're not the only ones feeling this. So I think that's why Griefcast has also been very successful, is it's people are able to go, oh, I can connect with you through grief. And sometimes I can connect from the exact story. My mum also had that. Yeah. I also lost my child. I also lost this. And it just makes you feel like, oh, I'm not the only person who went through that.
That feeling of this is normal. This is okay.
Normal, yeah. And with grief, because it has so much stigma attached to it, as much as, you know, depression and anxiety do, really, I think. People feel like they don't want to bring a downer. They don't want to like upset everybody, and then all their friends don't want to upset them. So like, oh, don't ask her because I might upset her. Rather than like, if your parents died, you're already upset. Like, you're not gonna make it. I always say to people, you're not like, my dad's dead. You can't make it worse. Like, literally, there's no way you can make that. Even if you say the wrong thing, he's still dead. So it's not gonna, you know, you accidentally asking me about Father's Day isn't gonna be like, well, that's the most painful thing that happened. So you can't really make it worse, but you can make it worse by not talking about it. Because somebody said to me in one episode that when no one talks to you about your grief, it feels like it's too painful for them to carry with you. And so if they walk on the other side of the road, what they're saying is, you have to carry that all by yourself. It's so awful, I can't do it. Whereas when they come across the road and speak to you, even if they carry your backpack for 5 minutes, what they've said is, that grief, that pain is bearable. I carried it for 5 minutes, ergo, you can eventually carry this for your life. Mm-hmm. But if no one does that for you, you just think, oh, well, human beings are telling me that this is an unbearable pain, and they can't deal with it, so I can't deal with it. So I think it's so important to realise that you can just carry someone's backpack for 5 minutes. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be, I'm going to be here for the next 50 years of your life. Like, I'm going to be the dad that you never had. Like, no one wants that. God, please don't do that. So just talking about it. I mean, it's so stupid, isn't it? It's the biggest cliche going. But guys, talk about it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
it's one of those weird things, especially when you're in a place where you just feel sad and you can't get out of it, and you're trapped in that, what just feels like that hole. It's usually the quite simple things that your brain isn't allowing you to think about, because you're so predisposed to thinking about everything negative that all the kind of things that could be positive you just don't even consider.
I know, and it's really hard, like, when you're grieving, because you just... I'm sure it's the same with depression. Like, you look out and it seems like everybody else is skipping around and the sun is shining on everyone else, and you don't. You've got the cloud, you're covered in rain, and it's... I think that's why it's so important to speak to people in similar situations, because then you can see, like, oh, you have a cloud over your head, but you're not... You got out of bed and you're dressed. Like, and that's what, you know, because my dad died, 20 years ago, and... People now say that to me, of like, they're 5 years in, they're like, oh, but look, you're 20 years in and you seem okay. I'm like, I'm all right. I'm okay.
Let's not go bonkers. Yeah.
But that's the thing of seeing, like, oh, you also have that cloud, but it's not destroying you. And obviously, it's not, you know, I will say it again, grief isn't a mental illness, but its similarities are really bizarre. Yeah. Like, it really does feel like depression, and can then lead to depression, because people are already in that state, and so it's very easy for depression to sort of arrive and then become, well, I already felt awful and now I just continue to feel awful. But yeah, it doesn't give you much. So frustrating, isn't it? Because it doesn't... I think it does in a way tell you what to do, because it's always the thing you don't want to do. And it's like anything, isn't it? It's like, do you want to eat the healthy thing? No, not really. But it's like, so that's probably the thing you should do. And I say this in... I do a lot of improv, and I mean, this isn't a great rule for, like, crossing the road, but, like, I say, like, if your feet don't want to do something, you should do it. So, like, if your feet don't want to cross the road in a busy highway, don't do it. But, like, in improv, if you, like, don't want to enter a scene because you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, your feet should just ignore your feet. Just, like, go. Just start walking. And the same with grief. Like, if you don't want to get out of bed, like, maybe that is the thing you have to do. Like, your body does sort of give you the things you don't want to do. Those are normally things you should be doing.
Completely. And also, we just don't ever let ourselves be sad.
Yeah, no.
We spend so much time avoiding it and never sitting with that emotion and just...
Who are you, my therapist? Oh. That's all she ever says to me. Perhaps we need to be sad. I don't want to be sad. That's why I've got all this work on. I'm very busy, so I don't have to be sad. There's no time for it. Grief is it's an unimaginable sadness. And I think what happens to some people, and definitely happened to me, is like you can't face being that sad. So some people obviously go depressed, or some people will go anxiety, whatever, you take your pick. And I think you are so sad for so long that part of picking yourself up is being like, right, I'm not going to be the sad anymore. But then you can keep running with it and be like, I'm never going to be sad. Yeah. ever again.
You go the other way with it.
I figured it out. and it's really hard, because it's just really sad. And I think we try and fix people. I'm sure you've talked about this, especially with grief. There's quite a strong urge to, like, I want to help. But I'm like, you can't help. You can't fix them. You can bring food around. You can talk to them. You can make sure that, like, their sheets are changed. You can pick up their kids. You can text them on the day before the anniversary, like, put a note on your phone so you remember when the anniversary is, so you text the day before just saying thank you. Like, there's lots of little things you can do, but you can't take away that sadness. And that sadness is something you just have to go through, and will continue. Like, as I said, I'm okay, but I still have bad days because he was my dad, and I'm always going to be a bit sad he died. Like, if I was like, no, now I feel happy about it, it'd be a bit like, oh. But you can also, but I talk about this a lot, you can also feel happy about it. You can come to a place where you're like, oh, my dad died, therefore I am the person I am, and I actually like the person I am. So it's not that I am pleased that he died, but I appreciate what life gave me and have made those choices. Yeah. I mean, it's a complicated issue to bring up. I'm happy he went, guys. That's what I'm saying. Sorry, Dad.
Plot twist.
But I love the idea, the small gestures idea. It really sticks with me all the time. Because one of the nicest things anyone ever did for me was, I was going through a really bad stage of depression where I hadn't left my house in about 2 weeks, and I wasn't getting changed. I wasn't eating anything properly. I just wasn't responding to my friends' messages. So my friend sent me a takeaway and had it delivered to my door, and then just asked the delivery driver, can you just make sure he's okay? Yeah. And just give me a text afterwards. And that's all he did. He made sure I had food in the house and that I was there.
That was so nice.
And it's just like those little things that people can do. It is just kind of checking in and like letting other people know that there is someone there that gives a shit.
Yeah.
Because when you are in those kind of deep moments and you is isolation, it's so difficult to think, that anyone else out there like cares or is worried.
And you, I think when you're depressed or when you're grieving, you're thinking big as well. You're like, how can someone take this away? Rather than, no, they can just say, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're like, I want this to go. I want someone to come and make this all disappear. And it's like, no one can do that. But they can check in and be like, yeah, that's such a nice story. Someone said on the show the other day, their mum died and they had to go back home and sort shit out. And he was a really messy, like disgustingly messy. And he was coming back to the house in London thinking, oh, God. And he said his male flatmate had just tidied up his bedroom. And he just came into a room and was like, oh, I didn't have to sort shit out before I just fell into bed. Mm-hmm. And he was like, it's the nicest thing that anyone has ever done for me. And then something that really struck me, Kaylee Llewellyn, her episode, she lost 6 members of her family in a year. Wow. It's such a good, inverted commas, episode, because she's just incredibly powerful the way she talks about what happened to her. And her best friend Matt did something really amazing, and that he said, like, do you want me to come round? And she said, oh, I'm not doing it, I'm just staring at a wall. And he said, well, I'll just come and stare at it with you. So they just spent the night, sat on the sofa, like, just next to each other, both looking at the same wall. And I was like, you think you have to do so much. You know, you think I have to take someone's pain away. But imagine if all you have to do is be present and just make sure that when they are in the pit and all they can do is stare at a blank wall thinking, what the fuck's happened to me? You're just there being like, yeah, I know. What the fuck's happened to you? This is awful.
People think they have to save you, come in and, like, rescue you. And I'm like, you can't. Like, you can't. And that's tough for the other person to deal with as well, because, like, say if it's my boyfriend, he's like, but I want to make this better, and I'm like, but you can't, but you can change the bed, and you can do all these tiny little things. You can cook tonight, you can just sit on the sofa and hold my hand. I think people forget that, like, say, it's just little things that need doing. You can't carry me out of this pit single-handedly, but you can put some little footsteps in place for me to just lift up a little bit. My old flatmate, I came in, she changed my bed and she'd ran me a bath and put I had shitty little threadbare towel, she'd put a big fluffy clean towel on the radiator, and she just went, get in the bath. And we didn't have a lock on the door at the time. She went, the boys know you're in the bath, they're not going to disturb you, get in the bath. And I came out and I wrapped myself in this big fluffy towel, got into clean sheets, and I was like,
so good.
Just one little evening, like, it didn't fix everything, but for one night I was like, oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
Oh, this, it was like seeing a little sort of torch beam of light through the little tunnel, and I was like, this is going to be okay.
Phone's really low on battery. You know, you can charge it for 5 minutes and it gives you, like, oh, I've just got enough to get home. And that's when people do these nice things. You're like, okay, that gives me just enough to get through the next week, the next day, the next hour. Because you're like, especially when it comes to grief, like, you can't replace a death. You can't do that. And you shouldn't. Like, we have to accept we're all going to die. That's part of life. The problem is we don't talk about it. So when it happens, it's like, oh my God, someone died. We shouldn't have that reaction. We should be like, of course they did. They're a human. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what was supposed to happen. So it's really important to know you're not going to take grief away ever. And you shouldn't. Grief is a process that is important to go through. But yeah, like you said, you can just dib a little foothold, throw down a bit of
Little power-ups in a video game.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm not going to get to the end of the level in one go,
yeah,
but if I can just get to this checkpoint, then I'll be fine for another few hours. I'll start again tomorrow.
Because you talk about grief quite a lot, obviously, in your day-to-day life and in your work, do you take any steps to kind of, first of all, does it ever just get a bit too much for you? And second of all, if it does, how do you, like, look after yourself in those situations?
As somebody with anxiety who does too much, it took me a while to notice that it was affecting me. So I definitely started, I was recording too many grief casts in a week, and I found that really difficult, because grief is obviously massive and it's important, but it shouldn't be 100% of your life, because that is equally as bad as, you know, I'm 100% happy all the time. So I've just tried to make rules for myself along the way. So now I don't do 2 in a day, because that's way too depressing. I try not to do more than 3 a week. I try and do 2 a week max. I find that's really helpful. I have an editor who like, so it means I don't, when I was editing it myself, I was having to listen to myself talk about my grief for 6 hours and then literally hear, you know, like going, then my dad died, then my dad died, then my dad died, and be like, oh God, like, why am I having to hear this in such detail? So that's really helped. And then I did a talk with a girl called Beth who set up an amazing, it's not a charity yet, it will be a charity, called Let's Talk About Loss, which is for young people who've been bereaved. And she had lots of people around her who were, I think she's in her early 20s, her mum just died, and she's setting up networks where if you're a young person who's bereaved, you can meet, they've got them in Nottingham and Bristol and London at the moment, and you can go to the pub with other people who've like lost their, you know, recently been bereaved, and just have a drink. The idea being like, you know, that you can still talk about normal young stuff without being like, oh, but also you know how I feel because it was the anniversary today. Yeah, I get you. And she had all these people around who were like, we need to look after Beth because this is a really huge thing and she's having to deal with everyone else's grief. The way they were talking about, I was like, I should be doing that for me. I'm not doing that. So they had set like out of office email. That was a massive thing for me. I now have an out of office on the Griefcast email. Something small as that, because I get amazing emails from people who are very sad and perhaps haven't told anyone anything, so I get very long detailed emails of, they have a grief story that they don't feel they can share, so they share it with me, which I feel very privileged to receive. But if you get 10 of those in one hour, it can be like quite overwhelming. So now I just have an out of office email that just says like, I'm sorry, here are the charities, like if you've lost a child, these are charities that are really great, if you've lost a parent, this is good, and here's Samaritans, like here's Cruise Bereavement Care. And something as small as that made me feel like, because sometimes when, I don't know if you have this, if you talk about something a lot, you feel like, oh, I'm the patron saint of grief right now, so yep. I don't want to let everybody down, because also, you know, that's another thing to beat myself up with, isn't it? Like, I'm not only am I the patron saint of it, I'm not even doing it very well, so they might take my sainthood away from me.
I'm not even going to get a date.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to remember you're not a saint, you know, you're just a human. So yeah. I try and, wherever possible, cut down that and be like, no, I'm just somebody whose dad died, like that's it, and is good at talking, that's it. Yeah. So I'm not your saviour, and I think you should go to therapy. Like, just try and, yeah, so small things, really small things.
It's a beautiful symptom of anxiety, isn't it? Just wanting to help everyone else because you are putting off looking after yourself.
Yeah.
And it's,
but also you know how it feels. Yeah. So you can be, I think people with anxiety are quite empathetic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
really.
You're like, oh, that's how I felt like, oh, let me help you. I'm so, oh my God, like, if somebody comes up like, oh, this is what you need to do, this, like, and then I'm hearing myself going, I do none of those things. Yeah, I do literally none of those things. Make sure you go to bed and don't stay up late, you need to get your sleep. There's me at 1 a.m. still writing emails to people who's so-and-so has died. So, but I try and just hear it, you know, when you just hear the alarm, I just try and catch them, which therapy has massively helped. I feel like I am only able to hear them because I'm in therapy, have been for years now. What a funny sentence, I've only just said that. And when you try and hear the alarm, so now, like, when it got bad with the emails, I was like, right, you have to do something about it. Stop hearing that, like, you're not okay. Mm. And then the out of office was like, it sounds so stupid, but it was like a game changer. Yeah. I just felt like I didn't have to feel bad for letting down all the people of grief. Like, you know, the patron saint has an out of office now, guys. So,
because I had to start doing the same thing, because I leave my DMs open on Twitter all the time.
Yes, see, I don't know how you do that.
No, I mean, a lot of it's just an abuse, which is fine enough. But I do get, like, I wrote a article about suicide a few years ago, and I got a lot of stories in my DMs afterwards, and I read them all in one night, and I was just drunk in the kitchen, didn't really know what was going on, felt miserable, and woke up the next day and just had to. I replied to a couple. And usually I start with, I'm not a mental health professional, I'm a fucking idiot. Yeah. However, but then the next day I just had to kind of go, I'm really, really, like, sorry, I can't help you right now. I need to look after myself. Not in those terms, obviously, but...
No, but you have to put your oxygen mask on first. I know, and it's like you say,
it's giving the charity names, it's making sure they have a lifeline, that there is a support network there in place.
Yeah.
But you do need to look after yourself, because people can be so altruistic that they are just wanting to help mm-hmm. everyone else, yeah. and you forget to look after yourself.
It's about anxiety, we're empathetic and love a project.
Oh, love yeah. a project.
Love it. Yeah.
Then I don't have to think about me and my sadness. Yeah. What's wrong with you? Let's sit down. And it, the thing with people with anxiety, like, we love to fix.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because then maybe I can fix myself. I love to fix. And it was funny, my husband lost his dad and his mum since we've been together, and you know, there was me, Mrs. Grief, like totally ready to deal with it. And when his dad died, I got this. I've been there. His mum died. I was like, I need to fix you. Mm-hmm. Like, I went full Chris Martin on him. I was just like, and I found it so hard that I couldn't take his pain away. Mm-hmm. I found it like unbelievably difficult journey for me. And that was really interesting as someone who's like, oh, why don't people know how to deal with grief? And now having seen it from both sides, it's sometimes really hard. Mm-hmm. You want to make it better so badly. Yeah. Yeah, and the DMs as well. And you don't want to discourage people from contacting you because it sounds ungrateful. It sounds like, oh my God, stop hassling me. But there are often times where, like you said, you're just such the wrong person to talk to. Like, they clearly need something else. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's why it's amazing that these charities exist. And often with grief, people don't realise, especially like child bereavement now, there is for children who have been bereaved and people who have lost children, like there is so many amazing, like Winston's Wish and Grief Encounter and Child Bereavement UK. I think that's all of them. Like, there's, you know, even Marie Curie offer a service. Like, there was so much stuff that wasn't around when I was a teenager that now I'm like, I just want this resource to just be mm-hmm. available to people, because you go, there is actually someone who can help you. It's definitely not a comedian living yeah. in North London who's watching way too much Netflix. Yeah. Like, I am definitely not who you should be approaching.
But often it's that signposting that's needed as well, because yeah. these charities mm-hmm. are out there. There are so many brilliant charities, especially for young people nowadays, yeah. which didn't exist when I was going through
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
But very few people know they're out there. Yeah. You have to signpost
them.
And
if you're in that state, the last thing you want to do is, not in a lazy way, but you're like, I don't want to sit and troll the internet and
yeah,
look.
Yeah.
Like, so it can sometimes feel like, you know, deep down those things are out there, but you're like, I don't have the energy to get out of bed, let alone to try and Google who to help me. Like, no.
And it sometimes feels like such a massive Google, doesn't it? It's mm-hmm. like, you want to literally Google, how do I feel better?
Yeah.
And then so much weird shit comes up. <You're> like, that's not why.
How
I
can
want.
I admit this to Google if I can't admit it to myself?
Yeah. And that's what I love. Like, I'm very active on the Griefcast Twitter, and I find that really, that is, for Twitter, a really nice experience, because it's other griefters, as we call ourselves, helping each other. So if somebody's like, we call it like the DMCs, the Dead Mum Club. So we just had Mother's Day, and so I was like, okay, everyone use the hashtag DMC. And then I wasn't even involved. People were just like, oh, it's my first Mother's Day without my mum, I feel awful. And then people were like, mm-hmm. I'm 20 years in, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you read this book? There's this group near you. Oh, there's a meetup happening. I'm like, you know, the amazing thing about social media, like, you have, it is so awful sometimes, and then at exactly the same moment you're like, fuck, these people would not have found each other. Yeah. And here they all are on Mother's Day helping each other and mothering each other because their mums are dead. And it's just like, yeah, like, it's so amazing to watch, because you said those resources are hard to find mm-hmm. sometimes.
It's like Sarah Millican at Christmas does hashtag
join
in, which is so wonderful. And sometimes I look at the hashtag, and obviously I'm very lucky that I've got my family and I have lovely Christmases, but sometimes I do try and reply to just a couple of people, or I'll do, not like a rubbing it in the face, like, I'm having a lovely, but I'll try and write a joke about something that's gone wrong that day, or something that, because I'm like, yeah, it's such a lovely sort of tool for people to just feel a bit more part of something, which is nice.
Well, like I said, the biggest thing you feel is isolated.
Mm-hmm.
You feel isolation, and you feel like nobody understands. So when you've got people going, oh, no, I feel the same. I feel exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that feeling can go. That's nice. And I think once the isolation goes, you notice other stuff. So you're like, oh, I feel sad, actually. I don't just feel alone. I feel sad. Why do I feel sad? Oh, I feel sad because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. And I think the isolation is often like the icing. It blankets out everything, doesn't it? Because you think, well, no one understands me. I'm completely alone. You don't look at any other feelings. You're just looking, well, everyone else gets it. Everyone else is having a fucking great time, and I'm not. But they're not.
No.
They're not. Don't worry, guys. Everybody knows someone who's died.
But that was my first kind of exploration into that sense of community on Twitter, when I just finally wrote a post about how shit I was feeling. And so many people came back saying, yeah, I've been there, or yeah, I'm going through that at the moment. Or, like you say, read this book, or have you tried this, or like, there's this forum. And it's just like, there is still on social media, like Twitter gets a bad rap nowadays because there are Nazis and stuff on it, which isn't cool. And they should
they
go away.
They do ruin bloody they
get in
fucking
everywhere.
Fucking Nazis.
They ruin marches, uniforms, now Twitter.
But when if you do put something heartfelt and genuine out, people will respond in a genuine and heartfelt way, and the people will like support each other.
That's what I found with, when I started Griefcast. I honestly thought maybe 10 people will listen, probably only people whose dads have died. Like I thought, oh, who's gonna want to listen to this? And I was just overwhelmed by people being like, oh, thank you for talking about this, thank you for being vulnerable and putting this out there, I feel the same. And I just didn't know everybody else wanted this conversation, because that's how I always felt. It's like, I want to talk about my dad, but I don't want to bring everybody down, and nobody knows what to ask me, and it's always a bit weird. And then once you start talking about it and talking about how you talk about it, suddenly everyone's like, oh great, yeah great, I wanted to, I just wasn't sure you wanted to. And you're like, yes. So yeah, it's yeah, I think podcasts are equally, again, an amazing way of connecting. And as humans, that's all we really want, is to be connected with each other.
If you could go back in time and give like your younger self, we're given the average age, is like whatever age you think you could have taken it in and understood it. Any advice on mental health or living like without misery? What would you tell yourself?
Oh, let's see how this one goes.
Yeah. Like, go back to when she's 14. I'm like, start talking to him now. I know you think he's a dick, but honestly, you have only about 6 months left.
Time is short.
Yeah, time is short, guys. Yeah, I don't know. I suppose because obviously, yeah, he died when I was 15. So it's such a, like, when you lose someone when you're a teenager, it's a really complicated issue because you're not really a person. You know what I mean? You're still figuring out who you are. And then the people that you're supposed to be rebelling against aren't there anymore, so it's very complicated. But I think I would, oh god, yeah, I wouldn't go back before 15.
No.
Probably, I might pop back to see him and then go back forward. I think I would just try and tell myself to try and talk a bit more, because my fear was that I was so afraid of how upset I was that I thought if I start talking I'll become hysterical and I won't be able to stop. I didn't know. I just thought, this is so big, I'll start crying, I'll be snot crying, gibbering, and then I won't be able to stop, and they'll put me away for the rest of my life. I'll be dad. And what I didn't realise is once you start and you cry a bit, it then stops. But if you never open that door, you're so afraid, the door, don't open the door, don't open the door, because it will all come pouring out. So I think I would say, like, just open it for 5 minutes, talk, then close it. Like, you don't, again, we don't have to fix everything. You don't have to like get all your grief out in one go, but you can, it's okay to open the door to that pain very briefly in a safe environment with people that you trust. And they will then teach you how to close it and feel okay. Because I think for a long time, I just thought, no, that door should stay shut. That will be locked for the rest of my life to keep everybody safe.
It's like, but brain feng shui.
Yeah.
Move some things around.
Yeah.
Looks a bit better.
Open the door.
Close it again. Yeah. We'll hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
All the money we make from ads from this podcast goes to Calm, a campaign against living miserably. If you have a spare quid, please feel free to donate to Calm by going to dave.uktv.co.uk/calm. We've been Aaron Gillis and Lauren Patterson, and that's the end of the show. Thanks to Dave for letting us make this, Calm for being brilliant, all of our guests, and you, because without you listening to this, it's just the two of us sat with a microphone talking nonsense of terrified comedians. Anyway, bye!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history? Sorry? What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.